Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The enemy is you.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview, is brought to you in part by SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, and the Chicago Reader. Benny J., take it away.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it is Friday, January 22nd, 2021. Man, I had to look at the calendar D to get it right. And as we always do, just give you a check of what's in the news of the day. I'm going to read a headline in the Chicago Tribune, home delivered today. And here's the headline. And it's very apropos to the conversation I'm about to have. Well, at least with the person I'm about to have the conversation with. Chicago looks to next phase of vaccinations. Yes, vaccines very much in everybody's mind in the city of Chicago. Are we ever going to be done with this pandemic? Are we ever going to be able to open up the schools? These are all some of the issues that we've been talking a lot about on the Ben Jarofsky Show. We're not going to be really talking about those issues so much, but the person we're talking about, we've been talking to, has written about them. And so, as I always do with distinguished guests on my show, I ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself. So, distinguished guest, take it away.
Well, I'm Greg Pratt with the Chicago Tribune. I cover Mayor Lori Lightfoot. I guess I'm distinguished now that I'm starting to get a couple gray hairs from covering COVID and civil unrest. So thank you for that introduction.
He's very distinguished, ladies and gentlemen. I can't see a gray hair anywhere on his head. He's like 50 years younger than I am. So you're distinguished, Greg, for several reasons. And the main reason you're distinguished is the reason we're going to have you on the show. That means you're the president of the Tribune's Guild, the Chicago Tribune, and you're also a City Hall reporter. I promise our listeners I'd ask a question or two about that moment. I guess it's been about 3 weeks ago where you and Lori Lightfoot had it out, and Lori Lightfoot apologized to you. So let's give her a little credit for that. Folks probably want to hear your account of what went down and how great it is to get an apology from a public official. But I really want to talk to you about continuing our conversation with presidents of the Tribune Guild, Charlie Johnson, and Mary Wisniewski have been on the show. Evan Brandt, he's not with the Tribune, but he works for a newspaper in Pennsylvania that's owned by Alden Global Capital. So we've had a lot of conversations with a lot of journalists, Gregory, about Alden and the impact they're having on journalism. Let's start at the top with you in the Tribune. Talk a little bit about the organizing efforts at the Tribune. It's a relatively new thing for the Chicago Tribune to be organized on the editorial side. Go ahead.
Well, it's pretty remarkable. A few years ago, we decided that we weren't going to wait for scraps and we weren't going to wait for corporates to start doing the right thing. And we were going to unionize so that we could try and build a better future for our newsroom. We had a lot of people who were underpaid and who were being mistreated by the company. And so we decided to organize, which probably caused Colonel McCormick to roll over in his grave. And it's actually pretty remarkable to me that it took this long. I remember there was a serious editor who had a serious position of power. And when we first unionized, we, showed up, and when we went public, you know, we dropped off flyers on every desk in the newsroom, including management, just letting them know, hey, we're a union now. We're going to unionize. And this boss looks at me and they say, "What took you so long?" Which I thought was pretty funny, you know, and I don't want to get that boss in trouble, although they're not there yet and they're not there anymore. But I don't want to embarrass them. But But it was true because the Tribune used to pay people really well, and it used to treat people pretty well once you were in the door. And that hasn't been true for at least 13 years. So, you know, it was about time, and we had a bunch of scrappy people who were willing to try and take it into our hands.
Now, Greg, we went through a similar thing with the Reader. It was in the old days when the original owners of the Reader, very close to the writers and the editorial staff. It was more or less like a family, a working family. So the notion of unionizing was foreign and alien. After a few ownership changes and lots of layoffs, the reality set in that we had to move in a new direction and had to organize. And so a lot of the reporters, the journalists at the Reader went through this like soul searching process, Greg, where they were like, should I join a union? You know, I'm a journalist. I'm supposed to be quote unquote objective. Will that brand me in one way or another? Did you go through similar soul searching and questioning before you made the decision to go with the union?
So, and you know, it's not about politics. It's not about being pro or anti-union, but I wish I worked at a newsroom where union wasn't necessary because they were doing the right thing. So, no, actually, not a whole lot of trepidation there. I did give some thought to, you know, I don't want people to think that I would go easy on some of the political unions that we cover, which I would certainly not. It's not about that. Actually, a few years ago, I had a podcast called Byline Confidential where I would interview journalists. And I interviewed a guy named John Tevlin, who was the star columnist at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. And John had told me about how he was involved with his journalism union before he was a columnist. And people would ask him sometimes, how can you cover business or how can you cover labor? How can you do X, Y, and Z as a member of a union? Aren't you biased? And he's like, well, why don't you ask the people who aren't part of a union, you know, if they're biased? Because it's not it's kind of a silly point. You know, it's like, you know, I once had somebody from USCIS, the immigration agency that's not ICE, who also had done work for ICE. They found out I was Mexican-American and had worked for OI, and they said, can you really cover immigration objectively? And I'm like, you know, what kind of racist, dumbass question is that, you know, and in that case? And so, and, you know, we had a nice little conversation. I don't think I called them a dumbass. And we moved on from there. But it was I do know we had members who wanted to be clear, you know, and we are careful about we're not the fact that we have a union just makes us like so many workplaces in America. It doesn't make you politically biased, but I did have concerns about that. And I did have some sadness about, I wish that I worked at a place where that wasn't necessary, because there's a rich tradition in newsrooms of, you know, hey, we don't have to unionize because we're being taken care of.
Well, I don't know how rich that tradition is, and it's been a long time since it was a reality. So I don't even know if we can call it. Greg, virtually every newspaper can think of off the top of my head is undergoing some kind of, if there aren't already a union of editorial, an editorial, it's in the process of being one. And so what has changed at the Tribune? I've asked this question of every Tribune person that's come on. Eric Zorn, shout out to Eric Zorn, came on the show, talked about unionizing as well. What has changed at the Tribune that makes it so important for editorial to have a union?
Well, first and foremost, and most imminently, is the fact that we now have a majority corporate shareholder that I think is the devil. I think if you look in the dictionary, it says that they are the devil. Alden Global Capital is a hedge fund. And again, it's not a criticism of all hedge funds. It's not a criticism of rich people. It's a criticism of Alden, which has a track record of gutting newspapers, and they buy papers and they wring them like a towel, and they try to take every bit of profit out of them and hope that people don't notice as they slash costs. We just had a round of buyouts. We just they just announced that they're going to move us out of our newsroom. So we're effectively not going to have a newsroom. We're going to have a sort of newsroom at the Freedom Center, which is where we print the papers. But that's it's really a fig leaf. And they're going to save some money there. They've also saved money by being by allegedly being deadbeats on the rent. You know, they're being sued by your friend Sterling Bay for about $5 million in unpaid rent, which I'm not saying feel bad for Sterling Bay, but I am saying, you know, it is unfortunate to see a company shirk its responsibilities.
By the way, my friend Sterling Bay, very subtle way of saying that Sterling Bay is recipient of a huge TIF handout. But Greg and I are going to withstand our just the lure to have a TIF conversation. We'll just move right on to the buyout question I have to ask you. Talk about some of the great journalists who took the buyout and will no longer be writing on a regular basis for the Tribune.
Well, we're losing about 200. We lost about 200 years of experience, including Pulitzer Prize winners like Blair Kamen, who writes about architecture and who is a civic watchdog. We are losing a breaking news editor, Dan Haar, who shaped probably three-fourths of the people working at the Sun-Times and the Tribune, probably more. We're losing a lot of really good, talented people who have a lot to offer, but who, you know, don't necessarily think it's time to not take a buyout, you know, and you are happy for people taking a buyout because it means that they get to leave at least somewhat voluntarily, at least somewhat on their terms. You know, it's not like they're being booted out with a box, but it's sad because I'm not sure how many of those people would be leaving if they didn't think that they, you know, if they saw a better future ahead. And then there's concerns about, you know, is the Tribune going to replace a Blair Kamen and have an architecture critic? Because there are a lot of hacks out there who will be happy to put up a piece of crap buildings and nobody's actually paying attention that can scrutinize them. And so, you know, I have concerns about that. You know, in a healthy place, if people retire or leave, you replace them. The Tribune is not that healthy place, and it's really unfortunate.
One such hack, and this is me talking, not Greg Pratt, so don't hold him accountable for this. One such hack would be Donald John Trump, who got into a squabble with Blair Kamen that really sort of foreshadowed everything that was wrong with Donald John Trump and everything that was right about Blair Kamen. And I, of course, was rooting him on from the sidelines. It had to do with Trump Tower when Blair Kamen dared to criticize Trump's tower. So, yes, you're absolutely correct. Without Blair Kamen's voice, the landscape of Chicago, Greg, will go unmentioned. You follow what I'm saying? There will be no evaluation of what architects do. And that's a chunk of our landscape. So, yes, it is a loss. Has the newspaper made any indication as to whether they'll hire somebody to do architectural criticism?
Not that I'm aware of, and Blair has in his public comments that he doesn't know either, which is probably not a great sign. But we will continue to advocate for our readers and our city and our coverage.
Now, the last time Charlie and Mary were on the show talking about negotiations, they were in the midst of trying to negotiate a contract. What's the status of those negotiations with Alden's representatives right now?
Well, you know, the contract is still a work in progress. We still have a lot of issues to work through. We still haven't got some money. You know, there are a lot of other important issues. We want to make sure that they don't scab out the newsroom. We want to make sure that journalists have certain workplace protections. Some of it got sidetracked last year when, and this really illustrates the importance of a union. They came to us at the start of COVID last April, might've been May. I think it was April, to say that they wanted to, they wanted us to agree to permanent pay cuts and to agree that they have the right to furlough the arts and sports sections for like 14 weeks, which is about, you know, a third of the year, maybe a fourth, you know, a huge chunk of money for our workers. And we stood our ground and we said, absolutely not. You know, if there are cuts to be shared, if there is a problem and we need to, and we're being asked to contribute, we'll figure out a way to do it. You probably shouldn't be doing that because you have a lot of money in the bank and you're doing a lot of other stuff where you could save money by not being greedy. But fine, we can negotiate on some voluntary cuts. And I think we were the only guild at Tribune Publishing that did not have a permanent pay cut foist upon them. You know, we made the point that's something for the main contract. If you want to negotiate that, if you want to talk about permanent, we can do that. But we ended up agreeing to 3 weeks of furloughs, which sucked, both because of the financial hit and because it came at a time of immense civic importance, right? There was civil unrest at the time. You know, I came back just in time to cover the first time Chicago caught fire last year. We missed, there was just so much happening in 2020 that the company should not have been furloughing anyone for even a single day. And so that was really unfortunate, and it foreshadowed how craven Alden Global Capital is. But it also showed the strength of being able to push back collectively.
You mentioned something, you don't want them to scab out the newsroom. What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't want them to hire you to come in and cover City Hall for us, which I know you're dying to do. You know, I know that.
Pretty funny, Greg.
No, I mean, much as I like you, I would not like, I want them to hire you because, you know, outside of our newsroom, right, outside of our union, you know, they can hire you all they want. But no, we don't want them to decide that everything can be a wire story or that they can agree to take another newspaper's content for free. And, you know, cause smaller publications might be happy to have their work published in the Tribune for free because it's a bigger audience. So there's you know, a contract is a complicated thing and there's a lot that goes into it that you need to pay attention to. And it's not just money. Although obviously when we get to money, money will be important.
Mm-hmm. And life without a newsroom, man, I'm just trying to imagine this, Greg. I remember when I first came to Chicago, when I first moved to Chicago, it's like significant chunks of downtown real estate were owned and dedicated to newspapers. And then I watched the retreat, you know, the Sun-Times Daily News building became Trump Tower. This Daily News went out of business. The Sun-Times just kept moving further and further away from the central business district. The Tribune moved out of Tribune Tower. And now there's not going to be a newsroom when this pandemic is over. Is that correct?
I think it's basically correct. You know, we will have some place where we can do what they call hoteling, which is you can tell them, hey, I want to come in and take a desk, but that's not a newsroom. And you can call it you can try to call it a newsroom, but that's not a newsroom.
And the impact, what will that, the impact be on journalism?
Well, I think, you know, one of the important things is you can go over to a colleague and ask them for their advice or ask them about a problem you're having or a dispute with a government agency or with a public official or say, hey, you know, this thing happened and I'm curious about it. And there's, you know, journalism is a social business where we are talking to people about things that are good and things that are bad and things that are goofy and things that are sweet and heartbreaking and sad. And we talk to each other to learn about how to handle things. And it's, it really does hurt journalism. It hurts the citizens of Chicago. It hurts the citizens of Illinois to limit that in any way.
Yeah. And it's just the visual, Greg, the visual of a newsroom, it just strikes at like a certain power of the press. Now, that's funny coming from me because I've always worked, the Reader never had a newsroom. So we've always been, it's like you, we've always been scattered just the thought of me going to one place on a regular basis is bizarre. But I still like the idea of a classic newsroom. I feel as though that is what makes like a Tribune, the Tribune, and the New York Times, and the New York Times, and so on and so forth.
Well, you know, you guys at the Reader are outlaws, and you know, the small personal story is I'm a, you know, I got into journalism in no small part because I was a John Conroy fan growing up, and you know, I remember reading his stuff in high school, and I thought to myself, you know, that guy, this guy must be some wild young punk who's out there running, doing all these stories and telling truth to power. And then I met him and I'm like, wow, you know, he could be an FBI agent. Was he working for the Reader? And he's an incredible man and an incredible journalist, but I have a lot of respect for the Reader.
That was unsolicited. I swear to God, I did not tell Greg Pratt before this. All right, here's what you're going to say. When I mention the Reader, you say something nice about Conroy. By the way, Conroy does look kind of like an FBI agent. He's got just sort of the, you know what I mean? Like you could see John Conroy's look on a TV show, FBI guy. All right, so where do you think it's going at the Tribune, Greg? If you do you think you'll reach an agreement? Do you have a contract? Do you think Alden will just sell it? I mean, what's your sense of where it's all heading?
Well, on the good days, I hope that somebody will come in and buy the Tribune and rescue it. I think that that is the best case scenario. On bad days, I worry that Alden will own it for 10 years and gut it, which I think if Alden owned it for 10 years is exactly what would happen. On middle days, I think that the power of the newsroom will be able to prevent as the worst of it, and we can continue to be a strong paper. I know that the journalists who make the place run will fight and stick around and do good work for as long as possible, but we really need help. And I know that Ken Griffin is listening to this and can do his civic duty, or some other really wealthy person, because, you know, people think about Jeff Bezos, but there's a guy, Glenn Taylor, who owns the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who is a billionaire. He's conservative. He bought the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He owns the Timberwolves. You know, he hasn't run it in any way that is bad. In fact, it's one of the most successful papers out there. And, you know, people, the lefties, which you are part of, and that is not a criticism, were scared of like, oh, Glenn Taylor's buying this paper. But I think anybody in news would understand that Glenn Taylor's a great newspaper owner. You know, it doesn't matter whether a rich person who's on the left or on the right buys the paper, but somebody who cares about Chicago should buy the paper.
All right. Look, Kenny G is a big listener of my show, and he had a lot of money to donate to various political campaigns and a lot of money left over. So come on, Kenny G, kick in, buy the Tribune, save a great institution in Chicago. All right. I know we're out of time because you have another appointment you got to get to, but I promoted this. So let's just close by telling sort of like a great war story for Greg Pratt. Chided by Lori Lightfoot, and then she had to backtrack and apologize. Take us through this, what went down.
Well, the mayor had been mad at me for a little while because I had been reporting on things that she had done that she would prefer that I not report on. The less flip way of saying that is, you know, I'd done some stories she didn't like. You know, she had done some things and made some promises. They didn't quite work out. She'd been upset for a little while, which she alludes to in her comments. The Anjanette Young thing starts to happen. I was the first reporter aside from CBS to write about what a mess that was. You know, not just the raid where they raided a woman's home while she was changing and kept her naked, handcuffed for 40 minutes as she told them 43 times, "Leave me alone, you're in the wrong house." That's bad. And then the law department went to court to try to prevent the TV station from going public, which is really bad and really stupid. It's astounding that any lawyer thought that was, you know, a good idea, especially for a political organization. You know, your boss needs to get elected, but they did that. And so I understood the seriousness of that. I wrote about it. I had a lot of questions for the mayor about, you know, why exactly did you refuse to give Miss Young her video? And the mayor got really mad, and she said, we didn't do that. And then she said that I had been reckless and irresponsible for many months, which is why it's relevant that they had been mad at me for a variety of stories. And then she kind of moved on to another subject, and immediately every other journalist in town was like, yeah, that's not cool. And by the way, CBS, to their great credit, immediately pointed out that the premise of my question was correct. I mean, I had talked to Young's lawyer, who had told me, yeah, on November 1st, 2019, she requested the video. On November 15th, they denied it. So I was on strong footing, but the mayor was upset, and she lashed out, and then she called me, which she said publicly, and she said she shouldn't have done that. She apologized. And I legitimately accept that. You know, it's not like it's an interesting story. It's part of the job to have the powerful people be mad at you. If they're not mad at you, you're probably doing something wrong. You know, it's not as it's a good story. It's not as colorful as the time that Daly offered to put a gun up your buddy's butt and shoot him. I think I don't know if he said shoot him, but the gun was going in the butt. I don't know what he was doing in the butt. But
were you in high school then?
What was it? 2003?
No, it was 2006. I always get it. I want to say, God, time is just flying by. Maybe, let's just say 2009, for lack of knowing. That would be like within the ballpark, Greg. But 2009, I want to say.
2009, I would have been in college. In 2006, I would have been in high school. Not to, just as a random aside, I remember you writing about Monique Bond at CPS being mad at you once and saying that, and they asked for an in-person meeting with you, and you described it as being the first time that it ever happened, where, and it felt like being called to the principal's office, which yes. I still remember from reading in high school.
Wow. Damn, man. I feel old, but I remember that story. I remember that was when I was counting up all the raises. They got mad at me because they said they were cutting salaries, but in fact, everybody got raises. Yeah, I remember that. Good memory on your part. I remember they offered me, people advised me, when you go downtown, don't drink the coffee they offer you because it could be poison. But Mayor Daly, I'll say this about Mayor Daly. He never threatened to shoot me, and he never called me. I don't know. She didn't call you a liar, but Mayor.
Reckless and irresponsible.
Yeah. Now you, by the way, you took the high road. Now this is just me. Okay. You took the high road. You took her, you accepted her apology really, quickly. It's all no harm, no foul. Let's move on. I got to give you credit for that one. And I think, I guess that we're supposed to do that. You know, you're not supposed to have a grudge or anything. But I know if it was me, I'd be like, God damn that.
Well, you know, while
working through. Go ahead.
I respect her. I've gotten to know her pretty well. I covered her very closely during the campaign. I respect her. Obviously, I don't appreciate what happened at that press conference. I do appreciate the conversation we had afterward. The job's not about getting personal. Sometimes they get mad. I get mad. It shouldn't be happening, you know, in general in that way, but you know, you can't hold bad feelings. And you write stories sometimes and you don't expect a love letter either. It's all part of the job. So, So there's no hard feelings and there's actually a lot of respect there.
All right. That's good. Well put, Greg. And if people want to support the union, going back to close where we started, if they want to support journalism and the journalists at the Chicago Tribune, is there a website they go to? Is there any way they can help out? Any information you want to pass out to folks who might want to help?
We have a page, ChicagoTribuneGuild.com, where we have a support our journalists page so you can share your thoughts. And I think that's a place, you know, we encourage people to subscribe and we encourage people to let the goons know how they feel about them.
All right, man. Just like Evan Brandt, let the goons know. Alden Global Capital, man, come on guys, do the right thing with the Chicago Tribune. Greg Pratt, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. Stay safe and sound. All right.
Thank you.
All right. That's the great Greg Pratt. I'm Ben Drofsky. Take care, everybody.